my faithful ones. Thank you for coming out. It's nice when I travel this far to have somebody come listen to me. You know, whenever you look at doing child training, if you don't think there's a great controversy going on, you ought to just do parenting talks or marriage talks. Either one, the devil really attacks, and he attacks our family. And I used to do these years ago, and then I stopped because it seems like there wasn't an interest out there anymore. It just kind of died down. And then about 2007, I started getting calls again to start sharing. So I started again in 2007. And since then, 2 weeks, always before a seminar, the enemy attacks me somehow, some way. It's always my health. 2 weeks ago, I went to bed Thursday. Been fine. Friday morning, I woke up with a staph infection on my nose. It was swollen. It looked like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It was swelted. And I thought, what is this? I tried treating it naturally. It wasn't going away. So I went into the doctor, and they said, you got a good staph infection. So they put me on an antibiotic. The year before that, I was doing a seminar, and I got up, and I had a pancreatic attack, I would say, about 6 years earlier. And about 30 minutes before I went on, I told my husband, I'm having an attack. That's what this feels like, just like that pancreatic attack. So I got up and I said, I only had one talk that weekend, just one. And I said, I just want you to know the enemy's attacking. I'm going to start my seminar, and I'm just going to go as far as I can go. And then when I can't, I'll just see what happens. The minute it stopped, I fell, and they took me to the hospital, and I had a pancreatic attack. That one cost me $8,000. So I told the Lord, I don't mind being attacked, but I can't afford $8,000 every time we do this. So could you make it cheaper? This one's only going to be about $300. So I charge for my seminars just so I have money to pay for my health. But the enemy really attacks. A couple years before that, I was walking down my steps, and I missed the bottom step, and I fell, and I ended up hitting the wall of my ribs. So I had to go in and see if my ribs were broken. That was 2 weeks before. The year before that, I couldn't breathe. I was working on my talks, and I get to where I can't breathe, and I told my husband, if something doesn't open up, you've got to get me to emergency room. I can't breathe. And so my daughter gave me some Breathe Easy, took that, and I just laid down and helped. The next morning, I called the doctor, and he got me in right away. He said I had an allergic reaction. I'd never been allergic to anything. I had an allergic reaction, and he gave me a steroid shot, and he said, if you hadn't come in, I would have seen you in the hospital with anaphylactic shock. That's how bad it was. And after it was done, it was done. It was fine. I came up to Oregon, did a talk up here, turned on my computer. It froze, wouldn't even turn on. So now I can bring two backups. I always have them on two jump drives now. But that wouldn't turn on. So we got a whole group, prayed. It came on long enough so I could get onto a jump drive, and then I had to put it on the pastor's. And I thought, well, I just have to replace it when I get home. Well, that was 5 or 6 years ago, and this is the same computer, and it's working fine. So it was just parenting. So if you wonder if there's a great controversy, there's a great controversy. There's two attacks on God's Sabbath and the family. And those were the two institutions he established in the garden. And the enemy's attacking. And like I said, I just asked the Lord, I don't mind being attacked. Well, I can't say that. It gets weary. It's very weird. This week was a lot of oppression. And I thought, well, somebody needs this. I don't know who. Because I was so oppressed. So my husband just kept praying. And finally, the Lord gave me a quote Thursday. And it was talking about the shaking. And it was talking about how the evil angels are pressing darkness around God's people. And it's always because of present truth that they're trying to walk in the light. So these angels are just pressing down God's people and pressing God's people down. And then the good angels are, she calls it wafting their wings, going back and forth just to try to get the darkness taken away, expelled, so you can see little glimpses of Jesus. And that's all I had. And it got so bad Wednesday, I told my husband, I can't see Jesus' face. I feel this oppression. I can't see his face. So he prayed with me. My daughter called. She was praying with me. Friends that I have a prayer group that pray with me when they know I'm giving a seminar because they know the attacks of the enemy. It just never stops. And one camp meeting, I was fine, got up to speak. And I walked in, Michigan has me quite a bit doing their seminars, and I'll be doing a whole week there. And I went to her, and I said, Gail, and my voice just gone. And she said, let's pray. I had no voice to even do the seminar. So we prayed, did my seminar, and then my voice was gone. The next day, no voice. We prayed, did my seminar, no voice. And that went on for the about 3 days out of that week, finally the devil just said, oh, just let, give Rebecca her voice. I don't know. But anyway, there is a great controversy going on. And like I said, if you do parenting seminars, you'll see that great controversy. And I know it's because when I raised my children, there wasn't near the stuff that my kids were bombarded as there is now. We didn't have technology. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have video games. We didn't have that. And so parenting today has to be very intentional. And there's things that you're going to do that nobody else is doing. And also, 2 o'clock meetings are the worst time to have a seminar, so please, if you get tired, just stand up. I understand, because this is a time to stay awake, and it's really hard. So anyway, this is called Training Up a Child. And isn't this cute? This is how it ought to be. I remember the very first time my daughter, we went to my parents. My parents are not Adventists. I was raised in a very functional home, but not a Christian home. And we went up there. My little one, she was 3. She was learning how to pray. And she has loved Jesus from the moment she was born. Maybe because she wasn't conceived in righteousness, you know, I don't know, but God did something mighty in her heart. Matter of fact, I was so much into drugs that when she was born, I asked my husband to count her fingers and her toes, make sure she had all of them and they were all in the right place. That's how, and I don't know how many times I had to pray through my pregnancy that God would not hold her accountable for the sins that I did. I'm sorry. Anyway, so God just put a special love in her heart for him. So she's always loved him. We went up to my parents' house, and we always had family worship, and we were having it in the living room, and she went and got her papa and asked him to come join us, that he needed to be part of this. And he said, I don't know how to pray. And she said, okay, just get on your knees, papa, and I'll show you how. And she said, Dear Jesus, and he didn't say anything, and she opened her eyes, and she said, repeat after me, papa. So, Dear Jesus, Dear Jesus, and then she went on and led him in a beautiful prayer. And so she's always had a heart for Jesus. Matter of fact, when she started Bible studies, she asked my dad if he would go through a series with her, and he did. So, and she used to do correspondence. When she was 16, she went to correspondence school. So she's always been had a love for the Lord and a love for his word and a love for souls. And so we want to train up a child. Now in Proverbs 22:6, it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now this is a promise that the way that a child should go. And it says, this is a promise, when he is old, he will not depart if we train that child in the way that the child should go. It's a promise. So even people that say, my children are out, I always say, just stay faithful. They need to watch you stay faithful. Because God knows how to bring children back in. He knows how to bring families back together. So just stay faithful. Do what you know to do and let God take care of the rest. And child training is a faith experience. You don't get to see it. As a mother, I can't tell you how many times I went to bed crying, thinking, am I ever going to see anything good for my labor? Am I ever going to see this? And just by faith, I believed, yes, I would, just by faith. Because parenting can be weary, very weary. And so this is just a promise. So we have to know the way that he should go. And so that's what we're going to look at first, is what is the way? Does this one come on back here? On the screen? I just like to see it up there too, so I can see what's happening, because it's real slow in movements here, and it's a little faster up there. So in the way that he should go, what is the way? A way means a road or a journey. John 14:6 says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus is the way, the road. Where does the road lead? Thank you so much. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. So to the Father is eternal life. The road, the way of the road is found in 2 Peter 1:4-8. It says, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these ye might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. So this is the ladder that it's talking about, that we are to climb. So it starts with precious promises, and it climbs this ladder, because we're giving these precious promises, and it leads to partake of Christ's nature. So when I read this, I really like, anytime I'm doing devotions, I'm looking for those stepping ladders to see what ladders am I to walk. And it's like any ladder, once, except in the, you, when you walk a normal ladder, when you get to the end, you're at the end. God's ladders don't do that. You walk them, and then he takes the ladder, and he moves it up a step, and you got to walk it again. And then he moves it up a step, and you got to walk it again. And that's why we're ever growing in Christ, because he keeps bringing up requirements on us. So where I am today is very different from where I was when I first became a Christian. I don't dress the same. I don't talk the same. I don't do the same things because God has brought me up to a higher ladder. And I know he's going to continue and keep bringing me up to higher and higher ground because he has a place and a determination where I'm going, a goal for me. And as long as I keep walking, he's going to bring me there. And so this is the ladder that we're to climb. And besides these promises, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to your virtue knowledge, and to your knowledge temperance, and to temperance patience, and to patience godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness charity. 2 Peter 1:4 through 8. So I knew that this was the ladder that I needed my children to go. It started with faith, and I'm going to add to my faith all these pieces, and it's going to end up my children being ready for God's kingdom. So I want to look at each one of these as we go up the ladder. The first is having the faith of Jesus. Now, the way is Christ. So it's not just having faith and patience, but everything in virtue. It has to be the faith of Christ, not just the faith in Christ that we believe in him, but we have his faith. We walk as he walks. We believe as he believes. That's the faith we're to call or being called to, the faith of Christ. Now, I started very young teaching my children in little things about God. And, you know, children, when you start teaching them, they have a faith that's unlike your faith. They are so trusting in the Lord. And I remember we were headed, my girls were 4 and 5. We were headed, I think even younger than that, because we were living outside of Phoenix at the time, and we moved. So they were probably about 3 and 4. And we went to the Christian bookstore, the ABC, Adventist Book Center, to buy some books. And it was pouring down rain. This is Phoenix. It doesn't rain a whole lot. But it was pouring down rain. And so my husband and I, we've got umbrellas, so we were talking about what we're going to do to go into the store and how we were going to get in. About this time, we heard our girls in the back praying that God would stop the storm. And Ron and I looked at each other like, should we stop them? What should we do? And so we didn't say anything. The minute they said amen, the storm stopped. We went in the store and we shopped and shopped. And then it started pouring rain again, and we were standing outside, and Ron and I again, people's little faith, we're saying, what should we do? And the girls were praying, asked Jesus to stop the storm, stopped, and we got back in the car. Now, and then started pouring down rain again. Now, I know God was honoring those children and teaching mom and dad about faith, because they never doubted faith. Another time, this was Halloween time. They were 8 and 9 at this time, and they didn't believe in Halloween, that they should go out, and they were concerned about all the children in the world going out on Halloween, but particularly in this little Prescott town that we lived. And so they went around and gathered all their friends, and we walked by, and there's a circle of these small children holding hands, asking God to bring the rain. Like I said, Arizona does not rain much. And you looked in the sky, there was no forecast of rain. It didn't even look like it was going to happen. But they didn't mind. They asked the Lord whenever it started, like at 6 o'clock, it was, you know, when it gets dark, about 7 or so, would the Lord bring the rain 30 minutes before the sun goes down when children were going out? And sure enough, that night it poured down rain. And so a lot of the children didn't go out trick-or-treating. So it's like, they just trusted, they believed. And so they believed. When Stacy became a teenager, we had we moved into this place that we went in what we call self-depleting work. They used to call it self-supporting work, but it's self-depleting work. We went into it, and I remember we made maybe $8,000 a year, and our daughter came. She was listening to a thing on the radio, and she came to me, and she said, Mom, do you realize we live below poverty line? And I was like, really? Well, you never gone without food, clothing, or shelter, you know? So we lived on $8,000 a year, and praise the Lord, when my husband went back into engineering, good pay, my shoes wore out, my clothes wore out, you know, everything wore out. So when you do God's work, God honors you. And so anyway, my girls, like I said, were building a faith. Well, my oldest came to me, and we were renting a place, and it had shag, that old shag carpet. And she came to me and she said, Mom, I just lost the pin in my watch. You know those bands and they have a gold pin that holds them together? And it was gold. She said, I just lost that gold pin, which is about this big, half an inch maybe, fourth of an inch, in this gold shag. And you're going to pray with me and we're going to find this. It's like, yeah, right, okay, we can do this. Anyway, so we got down on our knees and we prayed and she got up and she said, the Lord impressed me to go right here. She went over here, she got down and went like that. She says, oh, there it is, picked it back up and gave it to me to put back in her watch. Okay, now I should learn by now, right? And then, like I said, we were in self-depleting work. Autumn had gone to Andrews University, and she needed clothes. So we went out, and they had a sale. And at this time, we were very poor. I can say it was very little money. So we had to get clothing for her. So we went out, found all the sales, got clothing. And anyway, so when she went back, had Christmas, and she went back, started her semester in January, and she called that night crying. She was just so devastated. And I said, what's wrong? She said, I went to the laundromat and I had to wash my clothes and somebody had used bleach in the washer before. So when I washed my clothes, they all came out with streaks. You know, all the clothes, you know what bleach does, the clothes, you lose the coloring. And she said, and it's not pretty, Mom, it's not like striped, and it's not like tie-dye, it's like here and there and everywhere. She said, Mom, they look terrible. And I just said, I know we cost a lot of money. And I said, don't worry, I'll go look again, see if the sales are on, or we'll see if we can dye them back. So anyway, that night when she went to bed, she got on her knees and she said, I want to be faithful. If these are the clothes that you want me to wear, I don't want to have pride in my heart, I'll wear them. And I just asked, I don't want to lose my Christian experience over this. The next morning, she called me and totally different child. She was laughing and she was still crying, but it was a happy cry. And I said, what happened? She said, Mom, when I went in this morning, I had laid my clothes out in the over the chairs and stuff to dry because I didn't want to put them in the dryer. And I came back and all my clothes are colored. They're not streaked anymore. So the Lord brought her clothes back to life, you know. So we have seen God's blessing over and over and over. And I had a prayer partner, the one that I was telling you about, Danny's mom. We prayed every morning at 4 o'clock. She'd wake me up or I'd wake her up and we'd have worship together. And we'd pray and God would tell us who to pray for. And I remember one day I walked into, my phone was ringing, so I walked to the piano and I picked it up and I said, hi, Donna. And she said, how did you know it was me? And I said, because it wasn't at that time, it was a different time. And I said, because my phone is off the hook, I forgot to hang it up and it's ringing. So I figured God has us that somebody we need to pray for. So, and that's what it was. So we've seen God's power in prayer and what he's able to do if we just believe in him. And those are like we call miracles today that happen. He's not just a God back then that worked miracles. He's a God today that works miracles. And any change that happens in your heart, that's a God thing. God puts it in your heart to make those changes, you know, and so God's able. So that was building the faith in our children of what God wanted us to do. The next one was the virtue of Christ. I wanted my children to be so virtuous, not just in their appearance, but also in their thoughts, that they weren't earthly thoughts, that they were heavenward thoughts, and that everything that they did, their mannerisms, and when you were around them, you knew they were godly young ladies by watching them. And so the Lord blessed that. He just took their purity and they're just, like I said, when they wanted to get married, not only did they want to present themselves physically pure, but emotionally pure too. That they've loved nobody else but their husband. And I know when Stacy went to the altar and she turned to her husband, she says, I've never loved anybody but you. And the thing that was nice is when, because she had this passion in her heart to love somebody, she started writing love letters, I would say when she was around 16 or so. And whenever she got lonely for that companionship and what all girls go through when you want to have a boyfriend, she would write him a love letter and say, today I'm praying for you and today I'm thinking about you. So on her wedding day, she had this box of love letters that she gave to him. And on their honeymoon, they went through all the places where she had written these letters to share with him and what was going on in her life at that time of the thing that she was going through. So she says she never felt empty because she had those love letters that she was writing to him, telling him how special he was. Now, can you imagine how nice that was for him to get this box of love? Well, I don't know if a guy likes love letters, but he was touched by it that she saved herself for him. and her heart, not just herself, but her heart. The next one is the knowledge of Christ. Of course, I wanted my children to have to know him. So we started very early, not just learning about him, but who he was, his love for people, his love for nature, his love for the word. And we have a lot of things that we've done on nature, showing God through nature because of it. But they just spent a lot of time. Now, I homeschooled too, so I had an advantage, and I did that for a purpose. I wanted my children to be very, everything that I taught had to be taught through the word. Science had to be taught through the Bible. Math, I taught through the Bible. Everything I taught through God's word. I just wanted it to be the main foundation of everything that I was teaching. So I was building that knowledge in them. And they still have that, and they still apply it. Matter of fact, my oldest right now, her husband was preaching at one place, so she was preaching at her second church, and she had just asked me, we did one showing God through the butterfly. So she asked me if I would send that presentation to her so she could add some pieces to it, and that's what she was preaching this morning, is showing God through nature. The other is the temperance of Christ. Now, of course, temperance comes into entertainment, your appetite, music, any of that. Now, we were blessed in that when we took in rebellious teens, even though it was hard, and I had to constantly be with my kids when we took in rebellious teens, I could not let my children be separated at all. They had to always be with me because these were kids that were Adventist but very worldly and very knowledgeable, so I had to keep my children. So I had to always be present. So when we played all together. Everything I did, we were always together. But it really helped my children because they saw these girls that were in trouble, that were a mess. And for them, it was like, why? Why would they do this to themselves? Why? And they, as later on, one of the girls, which I'll be talking about later, came to visit our home. And by this time, she had two children. She had one child at this time. So she came, and the enemy was really oppressing that baby. And I said, you have opened up so many doors for the enemy. And if you don't want the enemy around, you've got to start closing some doors. And today she loves the Lord, has five children, and just loves God. But my girl saw that, and so their temperance was like, that's stupid. Who wants to do that? And all this heartache they were seeing. So it was very easy because of the children that we took in for my children to make good choices there. The patience of Christ. Patience is a virtue that is only developed by impatient opportunities. I remember when I started praying for patience, it's like, I'm praying for patience. Why are you giving me all these trials that are showing my impatience? He said, that's how you build this patience. So they were having the patience of Jesus. And so when they have a battle between the two of them, and siblings do argue. If you don't know that, I'll leave you. Siblings probably know. There's a lot of argument that goes on. And I said, you know what? We're a family. We work together. We're not on opposite teams. We've got an enemy out here. We're on the good side, and we fight this way, not fight this way. So you guys need to get on this side, and if you can't get along, there's something causing that. You may be impatient with each other, so you need to start dealing with that patience, claiming promises, whatever you need to do so God can work on your heart. The next one is the godliness of Christ, and that's having his character, which I've seen that over and over in their lives. The kindness of Christ. And I wanted that to be far-reaching, not just in our home. So we went and we fed the poor. We went to nursing homes. I tell you, when my kids walked into nursing homes, they were probably about, I would say, 11 and 10 at this time. And when they walked in, one of the ladies said, oh, look at the babies. So my girls turned around to look at the babies, and they were talking about them. And they thought, well, I'm not a baby. And I said, to you, them, you are a baby. And so it was really precious for them to spend time. So we would go and just read. So the girls got to where when we went over there, they would find all the ones who liked to be read to and would spend time by their bed reading for them. How many kids take up their time to go read to the elderly just so they can be with them? You know, they don't. There was many a times that we could not pay our bills, and my parents always gave money to my children. I can't tell you how many times my kids paid our bills for us because we just did not have the money to cover the bills. They didn't hold on to it, you know. So their kindness was far-reaching. The charity of Christ, that's probably where that one should have come in, because they wanted to give back to ministry. And they started doing our ministry with us because we used to travel and do ministry together. And they started preaching when they were very young. Stacy was giving Bible studies at 7. I think both of them were in the pulpit preaching at 10 and 9 years of age. So they started very early learning how to walk in the way of Christ. So we walk this pattern and we keep going until we come to heaven itself. So the way is growing in the character of Christ. For if these things be in you and abound, they make you that ye shall neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. 2 Peter 1:8. So Proverbs 22 says, train up a child in the way, which is in the character of Christ, and when he's old, he or she will not depart from it. So let's look up the train up a child. Train up means to discipline or to dedicate. Noun, training that develops character and self-control. As a verb, to educate, instruct, cultivate, and improve. So Proverbs 22 says, train up a child in the way he should go. We know it's the character of Christ. And it means to educate, instruct, cultivate, and improve my child in the character of Christ. And that's what it was saying to me, is that these are the things he's calling me to in order to get this. Now, like I said, I had to be very intentional. It was not going to happen if I didn't put forth every effort I had to make this happen. And so this is what I did. So we're going to look at educate, instruct, and cultivate. The verse goes on to say, there is a time for training children and a time for educating youth. So we have training children, educating youth. The training which Solomon enjoins is to direct, which is instruction, educate, and develop, which is the cultivation. Now, I've actually color-coded this so you can follow me as I go through. So anything that's directing the child is going to be in blue. Anything that's educating the child is going to be in red. Anything that we look at for development is going to be spiritual. And these concepts really overlap. It's not like you get done with one and then you move to the next and you get done with that and you move to the next. They're all kind of going together, and it's really not directed by age, but what's happening in the child. And I remember people used to ask me, does parenting get easier as they grow from 2 years to 16 years? And I always say, it's different. It's just different. It's not this easier. It's just different. You have to learn new things. What didn't work, what worked at 2, it's not going to work at 16. And so it's just different. But God still shows us how to do it. So let's look at this one first. There's a time for training children and a time for educating youth. Now, among the Jews, the 12th year was the dividing line between childhood and youth. And I'm going to use that for children like 0 to 12, youth 13 to 20. But I'm going to be honest, it really has nothing to do with age. It depends on the child themselves. When we had some of these teenagers in our home, I had to treat them like they were babies because they had no education as far as their training. So it's not really age that we're looking at, but maturity and where the child is. But in saying that, we have some guidelines, too, that you need to be careful, because you can't always teach a teenager just like you would a baby, because you're going to get a lot of rebellion. So there's two phases of child training, and this phase, the training children, takes lots and lots and lots directing and regulating the child, telling the child what to do, and it requires most of the parent control. Educating youth is reasoning with the child, teaching or explaining the whys. It's requiring more self-control. So we have a training children's more parent control, and we start pulling parenting control away until our child has self-control. So that's where we're going with this. So training children, most control, direct, educate, tell them what to do. Education, years 13 through 20, this is less control if you've done it right. You can start reasoning, teaching, and explaining the whys. Obedience to parental authority should be inculcated to teach persistently and earnestly in babyhood, and cultivated, developed by education or training in youth. Child Guidance 82. So we're going to tell them what to do. So the obedience is taught persistently and earnestly. Obey, obey, obey. When we get to education, it's developing the education. Obey because. Obey because. These are our cause and effects, cause and effects. Now, later on, we're going to be looking at, it's a little different when we're working with ADD child and ADD. The difference between ADD and ADHD is they both have focusing issues, but an ADD issues, or they have neither one have a lot of motivation, but those are very low in their dials, because I actually give them a dial setting to bring up their dials or bring down their dials. And so it's working with getting them more motivated, bringing up their dials. They run very low. They're in the twos and threes. If you had a dial from 1 to 10, they're in those low dials. So they seem like lazy, lazy children. And then you have ADHD that, far from lazy, they just bounce and jump all over the place. They have a lot of energy, so they have to learn how to bring down their dials. So they miss cause to effect. So later on, we'll look at how to work with ADD, ADHD children and bring in those cause to effect so that they're learning what some people naturally develop, then haven't naturally developed. Training children, one of the first lessons a child needs to learn is the lesson of obedience. Before he's old enough to reason, he may be taught to obey. By gentle, persistent effort, the habit should be established. And that's what we call external control. Educating youth. As soon as he's capable of understanding, his reason should be enlisted on the side of obedience. This is from Education 287, and this is what we call internal control. So if the child has internal control, we don't have external control. If they don't, we put on external control. And the reason that she's talking about here is the child's will. And if we looked at during church and all the whole things on listing the child's will, we see once we get the child's will involved, we'll start seeing change. So we have to work with that will. We don't pound it. We don't discourage it. We train it and teach it. So the child needs their will to overcome. So we just have to work with that will. External control training is for the child whose nature is not under control. Internal control educating is for the child whose nature is under control. So external control is what we do for our children. Internal control is what our children do for themselves. For our children to have self-control, if a child cannot control self, then we control self. But as long as they can, we can back up. And all of us that have had children have experienced external, internal control by potty training. So we start with a 3 or 4 year old, and they're going to go through this experience. First of all, external. We just put on diapers, and that's taking care of it. And then we start developing. We start talking to the children. We may start even bringing them to the potty chair, showing them what it is. We're watching to see if they're ready for that. Now, I knew my daughter was ready for some internal control. The minute she found she would be in the living room and she had a certain corner she'd go stand in and fill her diaper over in that corner. Now, I knew if she knew enough to go in that corner to fill that diaper, she knew enough to fill that diaper in the bathroom, so we could start moving her that way, you know. So now I know that there was some developing. So now I introduced the potty chair. And a lot of kids are afraid of that potty chair. They're going to feel like they're going to fall into it. So when I found that was her fear, then I had to put something around it or get a little chair for her because she was fearful of that big one. So we start educating. And then I just watch to see. So I'm putting on the diapers first. I'm educating her with the potty chair. And then I'm watching to see if she starts using it. As long as she's using it and everything's fine, there's internal control, I'm done. The only time I need to bring it back out is if, say, that she gets sick or something and she just cannot take care of it at the moment, then I have to put her back in diapers. But that's what the process looks like. As a parent, my goal was to have children that had self-control or internal control. Even though we would begin the training with these two phases, training and educating overlap. Remember, educating is introduced as soon as a child is capable of reasoning. So the purpose of external control is to teach self-control. So the child is choosing to do what is right at all times. It's not age determined, but rather they have external or internal control. So instead it's the development to see are the internal evidence that the truth is actually taking place in their hearts. If they understand what we're teaching them and accept what we're saying, then like I said, our external is not needed. If not, we apply it. If at any time the child chose not to do what was right, I had to apply external until the child once again had those internal controls. The moment that the child begins to choose his own will and way, that moment his education and discipline is to begin. Parents, you should commence your first lesson of discipline when your children are babes in your arms. I don't know how many parents have told me, it's a baby. This baby doesn't understand. babies understand a lot. And I always treated my children like they were grown-ups. I talked to them like they were grown-ups. I treated them like grown-ups. I expect them to obey like grown-ups, although a lot of grown-ups don't do very well. But I expected them to do what righteous grown-ups do to teach them. So I just expected it, and my children gave that. They expected, and I wasn't harsh or mean. I was at one time, but the Lord showed me how to change my own character. But if you don't do it this way, you're going to have obedience in the home. So the minute a child exercises the will, that's when we start. And so when we're starting, we're adding. We're always wanting obedience. Whether we have training children, educating youth, our goal is obedience. And there's lots and lots of external controls down here. So, and the training is constant. I went to bed crying many a night wondering, Lord, is this going to get any better? It's exhausting. I felt like a failure over and over and over. All I did sometimes was discipline, discipline, discipline. I thought, life's got to be better than this. I saw few rewards down here, and my question was always, will it get easier? The Lord brought me to a text, and it became my go-to text as a mother, Galatians 6:9, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap if we faint not. Like I said, I just claimed that by promise. I didn't see evidence of it right now, but I just said, Lord, I know you're going to take care of it. I don't understand, but I'm just going to trust that you're going to take care of it. So we just are going to be weary right now. Well, as you give lots and lots of training at this time, and you're stepping out by faith, doing what you're supposed to, now the children are going to start taking some control. And the more control they take, there's more respect you'll see, good choices that they're making, more obedience, and finally there's a ray of hope that's coming through. And then we get to do less of training, because now we're moving on up. They're getting older. They're doing more what they're supposed to, so now we're moving up this ladder. And there is handouts, by the way, if you didn't get these, that goes through these PowerPoints. But we are seeing more and more of them taking self-control, so we're doing less and less of our control. And then they have self-control, and we're at the end, we're little, very little. And when I got down to this stage, it was all worth it. My girls moved into their teen years with very, very little disobedience and rebellion. I had some, but it was so slight that I was able to take care of it. Now, I had opportunity, of course, to work with other people's kids that were rebellious, but because of this training, I was able to stop a lot of that. So training children, educating youth, is preparing the character of my child for heaven the way she should go. When these get backwards and we start educating children and training youth, I promise you, you create rebellion, which will not prepare them for God's kingdom. So let's look at what educating children is like. We have little or no control. Now, I've been in a home where three-year-olds reasoning and explaining why the child should obey. This is what not to do. I was in a home where this little three-year-old was actually taking care of the home. The parent was saying, would you like to go to bed? We have to get up early tomorrow. Would you like to go to bed? Do you know any three-year-old that's, how many of you had a three-year-old that says, oh, Mom, I think that's such a great idea. I need to get my sleep, so I'm just going to go to bed so I can sleep. How many of you had one child that has done that? I've never had a congregation yet where they've raised a hand. I've never seen that happen. Three-year-olds don't think about what they need and that they need sleep. Now, you ask an adult is more than happy to take a nap, but a baby, three-year-old, never wants to take those naps. And so they're not going to tell you that. So three-year-olds, to reason with them, parents will sit there and try to talk a three-year-old into obedience. Three-year-olds cannot be talked into obedience, and that's why parents bribe, that's why they ignore, that's why they threaten. All the things we looked at Friday night is because we cannot make that happen. They may comply for that night just because they'd be too weary of the battle, but you will find bedtime being a fight every night because you're trying to reason with them. So we do not try to get agreement. And a lot of people think, well, if my child agrees with me, then I can have them obey. Agreement has nothing to do with it. It does not matter whether they agree with you or not. What matters is that you're wanting obedience. But as a parent, you cannot be nasty to your child. You must be respectful, even when you're bringing them into obedience. because then your sin becomes no different than their sin. So don't be angry, don't get mad, still be gentle. You have to realize you're on this side. Helping your children to move that way is not a battle between the two of you. And it's really hard, especially when you get into those teen years, to not feel that battle. But we're on this side moving together into God's kingdom. So now we get to training the youth. Because we haven't seen them doing what we should be seeing them, now we're commanding and we're putting on so much external controls on that teenager and telling them, you have to go to bed. Now. You go to bed now. And now we're forcing and we're commanding and we're making. Why, if we're going to do that, we didn't do it when they were 3 instead of wait till they're 16. They don't evolve into good kids. We create them into good kids. They don't evolve. And so if we're going to do that, start early. And you can reason with them, and that's what you should be doing, is telling them why. So do you see something wrong with trying to force 16-year-olds and yet let 3-year-olds get away with dirt? It doesn't make sense to me, and yet it happens all the time. And it's not to put anybody down. I did it too. You know, I didn't know a lot of these principles when I first started. It was when I started seeing actions that I didn't like that my principles started changing. So instead of the pyramid this way, the way that we should set it up, it's an upside-down pyramid. And I promise you, like I said, you will see rebellion. So now we have little control that we had over their children, and so we have disobedience, we ignore them, and some people think it's cute. I've seen some kids say some of the nastiest things to their parents, and their parents laugh about it, and I think there is nothing cute about that. And they'll even say, well, wasn't that cute? I think, well, that's not cute. For a child to talk to a parent that way, that's not cute. So now we see that, and we start applying a little bit more pressure, a little bit more of those external controls, because we don't like what we're seeing. So we start yelling. Now we have to control those preteens, and we start seeing more defiance. So we start threatening them. We start taking away privileges. Those kids start getting rude. They don't help. They disrespect. They argue. They talk back to you. And the parents are wanting obedience. So they put on lots and lots and lots of control on the teenagers. And like I said, they have open rebellion. And I'm going to tell you, if you think you were exhausted when they were little, you're really going to be exhausted when they're teens, because it's a lot of hard work. But God can turn it all around for us. Disobedience must not be allowed. Sin lies at the door of the parent who allows their children to disobey. When parents fail to require prompt and perfect obedience in their children, they fail to lay the right foundation of character in their little ones. You cannot educate a child who has not first learned to obey. This creates disobedience, teaches your child to question your authority, teaches children to ignore your instruction, and it sets the stage for a rebellious teen. Too much importance cannot be placed on the early training of children. The lessons that the child learns during the first 7 years of age have more to do with forming his character than all that he learns in future years. Child Guidance 193, the first 7 years of life. So those of you that have children under 7, praise the Lord, you're good, you got some time. Those of you that have children over 7, it's okay. God knows how to redeem us and call us back. Hey, I was a rebellious teenager. He knew how to get my heart. He knew what I needed to do to make me a righteous young lady. So he knows how to change hearts. So don't ever be discouraged. Just do what's faithful and God promises to do the rest. So like I said, I work with children that have ADD, dyslexia, autism, and other behavior issues. These are children that are diagnosed with these things, also oppositional, what's it called? You guys keep telling me. Oppositional defiance disorder, ODD. Okay, but really, it may just be bad behavior. I have one right now I would love to bring into my home. Matter of fact, I asked my husband, do you think we could bring this child into our home for about a month? Because I think that's about how long that it would take. And my husband's praying about it. After he decides, and I'm going to go talk to the parent, because they're having such a hard time with him. And and that's how it was with Danny. You know, I prayed for Danny. It wasn't like Mom just called. I prayed that Danny would come into my home. And I told the Lord, I don't want Danny just for a weekend. I want Danny for a period of time, because I really felt like in his heart he loved Jesus. He just needed someone to help him and show him the way. So I prayed for him, and it was sad the way that he ended up in my home, but he did come to my home. Now I'm going to give you a list. This is a list that are mentioned for ADD. And this is actually taken from a book called Mercury's Child, and I don't think I brought it. I meant to. This is not a Christian man by any stretch of the imagination, but his book, and you may not understand it, I did because it's the type of parenting I do, but he had a list here, and these were just his kids that had bad behavior. Once he turned them around, they weren't acting like they had ADHD or oppositional defiance disorder. They weren't acting that way. They were changing. But it took quite a bit, and I'm going to share a little bit of what he did, because I've worked with several parents that I'm doing that with, especially my ADHD families. But, okay, so let's go through these. They get into a temper if they are not getting their own way. They seem not to be able to understand reason or logical explanations. They're defiant. They won't listen to you. They talk back to you when you're trying to explain to them. They're strong-willed. They tend to wear you down. They find it difficult or impossible to lose, even over small, unimportant things. They tend to blame others for even small disappointments. When correcting them, they say they do not care. They threaten or produce a temper tantrum of other retaliations. They say you're unfair. They try to make you feel guilty. They say you do not love them. They say they don't like you or love you. I just worked with a family not too long ago, and she said it hurts her so much when her teenager says, I hate you. And I said, just ignore it. Don't take it personal. He just doesn't have Jesus in his heart. We're just going to get him there. They appear to be selfish. They tend to argue with or be spiteful to brothers or sisters. They tend to be spiteful to you or say hurtful things. They tend to whine or complain. Often need a lot of reassurance, have tendencies to demand affections when they do not deserve it. Occasionally still be sleeping in their parents' bed. When with others outside the home, these character traits may not show. They tend to be better behaved with others because they do not know if they can get away with things like they do with their parents. And I have found this to be so true. Like I said, I was working with the family, and this child did not ever listen to the parents, really bad. And one day we were in a meeting, and the parents just stepped out of the room, and I was in the pew. He was at one side of the pew, and I was in the other side of the pew. And he started acting up, and there wasn't a parent in there to correct him. I looked at him, got eye contact, and I went like that. He sat down, and he crossed his arms, and he didn't move. He said nothing. And so I know that kid can be good, because if I have him, he's an angel. If another friend, if she has him, he's an angel. So I know he knows to be good, but he also knows how to work the system with mom and dad, so he's not good with them. If it works, a child's not going to change. Now, these, like I said, have the ADD. They look like that, but it's not really that way. Now, the child is usually very ADD. These kind of children have these characteristics, are very powerful within a family. They're strong, and they will overpower what's happening. And they bring a lot of discord in the family because of it. The child usually has very low self-esteem and is unhappy much of the time. The reason why parents and professionals misdiagnose these children is because you would not expect a normal child to have these issues. There is no way they could have such bad behavior if there wasn't something wrong with them mentally. Whoop. Yes, let me go back. Wait 1 second. There's too many buttons on here to go back and forth. Okay. So when we're working with children, we want to have, like I said, more control, less control as they start developing. So there's a time for training children and a time for educating youth. Now let's look at the second part, because we looked at training children, and I want to look at educating youth. So directing the child on the side of obedience, training the will, that's for the children in the blue. The red is reason should be enlisted on the side of obedience, enlisting the will. And like I said, I covered three of those. Higher, lower powers works. The king will works. Thoughts and feelings work. Which one's going to work? I don't know. And like I'm telling you, what I'm giving you right now is just an overview of what God has showed me. But when you actually go work with a child, you can't just go say, oh, well, I'll do this method and I'll just do this method. It may not work. You have to ask the Lord, what is it I need to do for this child at this time that's going to get the heart and not harden the heart? And so parenting is a very relationship-based experience. And I am always closer to God when I'm working in homes or when I had my own children, because God speaks to you, not audibly. I didn't hear his voice, but he always impressed me what it was that I needed to do. And I was always amazed when I got done and it worked. It was like, wow, that was really cool, God. I really like that. Yeah. But that's not me. It was him telling me what would work for that child. So it's very much of a relationship based. So the training which Solomon joins is to direct, educate, and develop. And like I said earlier, they really overlap. So you will see that while training children, you'll be directing, educating, and watching for development. When educating the child, you're still going to be directing, educating, and watching for development. So it's not going to change. It may just be a little bit different approach, but you're still going to have the same. So we're going to look at all those pieces. The training which Solomon enjoins is to direct, educate, develop. So this is what it's going to look like when it's all done. So this is our main thing. We're directing. And so in training, we're going to have lots and lots of directing, development. Direction, development. Some education. Direct, develop, some education. When we get to our teens and we've done it all right, and even if you haven't done 100% right, there's times that you can start doing more education, develop. Education, develop, some direction. Educate, develop, some direction. Okay? So that's how it's going to work. So direct means to regulate, to guide or lead, and to govern. And so we're going to go over these. Now, when you start, this is a baby, and it's okay for a baby to cry when they have a need because they don't know of a way to express it. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But as that baby starts developing and growing, and as parents, the minute you see that distress, you try to address it so it doesn't become too outblown. So you try to get it. There is actually a book out there, and I've watched this lady a couple times, and she has a fascinating video, but she has written a book about the voices of a baby. And I don't know how many, have any of you heard her? I can't remember her name. But anyway, she has a thing, and she has noticed, and she's very keen on sound. And I don't know if she was a music teacher, but very keen on sound. And she knows babies have different cries. So she knows a certain sound meant they were hungry. A certain sound meant they need their diapers changed. A certain sound. And so she listens for these. And she has a video. Like I said, you can type her on YouTube, the lady that has baby talk, you know. But anyway, and she'll go through. And she's been on 60 Minutes and different things. But you can listen to these babies, and you can hear these different sounds. And so she works with parents to listen to the sounds and meet the need of the baby, because the babies are actually communicating to you. You just don't know their language. But she said, once you know their language, then you're able to work with these children. Fascinating book. And it works. And so other parents that are trying it are able to make some changes just in their babies because of the conversation that's going on. But when a child cries, we're trying to meet it before it gets out of hand. So we're trying to meet that need. As that baby's growing into the toddler age, what was acceptable as a baby is no longer acceptable as a toddler. So if they're screaming for everything they want, that is not acceptable. It's only when they start talking nice to you that they should get what they're asking for, if you are okay with giving it to them. And I'll go through some that I've done with in homes and a little later. So it's your job to teach the child how to be polite, not to get everything they want, and if they continue to give what the child they want, you're going to end up getting teenagers that are going to scream for what they want too. But by this time, they're big kids, just like this family I'm working with right now. I said, you know, it's not going to be long that he's going to be bigger. And she just had a situation come up that she said that usually if I talk to him and we just keep at it, he will back down. But this experience, he got in her face, and he was right here in her face. And she said, I've never had that fear, like, what am I going to do if he pushes even closer in? What am I going to do? And if he pushes, what am I going to do? She said, I've never been in that situation. He's never walked into my space. He's always been back, and he'll back down. But this time, he wasn't backing down. And he's 13. And I said, if you don't do something, he's going to be 16, he's going to be 17. He's getting older, and his space is going to come into your space, and it's going to become physical. So what are you going to do? So that's what we're working on right now, is to back up. So she has some homework that she's working on, and then she'll report back to me. So I can't tell you what's happening yet until at the end of this. But anyway, so we're trying to teach her because he has just pushed past a boundary that's very uncomfortable. And so she's got to push back on a boundary. But right now, I'm just working with her in compassion. You've got to speak kind and tender. When you, even you confront him, you can't bring that self up, that child-seeing self, because now yourself and that self, you've got the devil against the devil fighting, and you'll never see what you need to see. So you got to move in with Jesus and just keep moving in with Jesus. And as you do, Satan has to run from Christ. He cannot be in the presence of the Lord. So when you bring in Jesus, he's got to go. And all children have disappointments. That's never going to change. And if you don't teach your child to handle disappointments, you know, they get laid off a job. Sometimes their boss doesn't like them. They like somebody else, gives the job to somebody else. You can't have adults going around dealing with disappointments in negative ways because they have, it's just a natural part of life. So training the child's will for obedience. Directing would look like this for a child. It's the strongest at 0 to 5 years of age and strong at 5 to 12. So the strongest direction is those 0 to 5 years. It can be times to eat, times they're going to play. You choose their clothes, their toys, their friends, their behavior, their manners, how they're going to act, their traits of character, work ethics. You're the one that's training that. And I have a whole thing on how to set up. It's called the Battle of the Heart, and it's how to work with the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical part of children, which is beyond the time here. It's directing some things. If there's new standards, this is what it looks like in the youth, to direct a youth. New standards, a child does not have internal control, we'll have to use some. You need less by the time they're 13 to 20 years of age. It can be examples like how to drive, you have to teach them how. Every child needs to know how to operate a car. I remember when we were teaching Stacy, somehow she got the idea that when you go around a curve, you speed up. Because her dad was telling her that there's a time you could speed up right at the end of the curve, you can speed up a little bit as you're getting out of the curve. Well, somehow she got the idea you're supposed to speed up at the beginning of that curve. I tell you, I was so glad when she got past this. Teaching her to drive was just, I came home, my nerves. Tell my husband, you got to do this part. I can't do it. But that's what she was doing. Stacy's very, she does not cause to effect, and logical consequences were very hard for her. So she's very literal. So if you say it, that's what she thinks. So she has a hard time making those adjustments. And so she prayed. She's prayed a lot. Lord, give me, it's not common sense. That's what she needs, common sense. So she had to pray for common sense. Most people have it. She didn't. So we had a teacher that mechanics, both my girls enjoyed, the youngest one in particular, loved working on cars. So her and dad built a truck. First time they took it out, he didn't put the fuel line in very good. Anyway, car went on fire. They had to run to the neighbors. Good thing the neighbor was home because we live out in the middle of nowhere then. That neighbor was 5 miles away, so they were just broke down at the neighbor's house. He was home, came and put the car out, and then they came back and rebuilt the damage that they did. But anyway, they had a lot of fun. But then when she went to go take an SAT test that she had to take, or ACT test, she was so excited. She said, I knew everything on there about mechanics. So she was filling all this paper out and so excited that she knew how mechanics worked. Cooking, finances. I actually turned the finances over to our girls when they were 16 years old. All their friends started talking about marriage. And I told the girls, you have no idea what marriage is. It's not just all this fun and all this romance. There's a lot of work in marriage. So for when they were 16, they took care of all the bills. They took care of all the shopping. All the foods had to be on at a certain time because their daddy was home, and they always had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So if they didn't get the meal on in time, they served peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And when they were done, each of them had a whole year of taking care of the house completely. At the end of that year, both of them said, I don't think we want to get married for a long time. And my youngest one just told me the other day, she said, I don't want to do somebody's laundry. I don't want to wash their dirty socks, and I don't want to do that. And she was just visiting me for a week, and she sat down. She said, Mom, I'm at the point that I'm ready now to do the dirty clothes. Yeah. So I said, well, that's good. It took her a while. But anyway, so somebody said maybe I did too good of a job because we waited so long to get married. Any new experiences? You will find that there needs to be more directing with boys and strong-willed girls than with most girls and more passive boys. Educate, to instruct, to inform, and enlighten the understanding, enlisting the child's will for obedience. So we had the teen that I was telling you about that came to live with us. She was with us 3 summers. And when she came, she was, like I said, raised in the church, but she got into demonic worship. And she went to a lot of rituals that they had, and she was cut. I mean, a lot of kids will cut. A lot of kids that go through emotional will do cutting, but she was cutting just because of their things that they were doing, dancing around the fire and cutting themselves. And anyway, and putting cigarettes out on her arm, and she was a mess. She was really a mess. So she came to stay with us, and while she was staying with us, I asked the father if he would get some help too, because the father was into alcohol, even though his drug was legal, hers wasn't. I said, you know, the same thing's happening. She's using it as an escape. So we don't mind taking her, but we just ask that you would get some help too. So we had her for 3 summers. And the first summer was just teaching her, just joining in family worships with us, teaching her how to pray, how to study. The second year she came to live with us, the summer, she came. All her friends were going to go somewhere. And she came up to me and she asked me if she could go with her friends. And I knew what her friends were going to go do because I knew her lifestyle. And I said, well, let me pray and I'll give you an answer. So I went and prayed and I told the Lord, I said, you know where she's going to go. And I can tell her no. And out of respect for me, she won't go. But that's not going to help her. So I just asked that you show me something that I could say to her that would make her not want to go. And she's very, very compassionate young lady. She cried over people that got hurt, animals in particular. She was just very, very sensitive. And so the Lord said, I want you to go tell her about Calvary. And I want you to make it as graphic as you can for her. And so I sat her down. I said, let me tell you a story first. She said, okay. And so I started going through Calvary. And I said, when Jesus was walking down that road, they were beating him. They were hitting him. And I said, when they took the whips to his back, it wasn't just like a whip and they were just gently hitting him. It was like a scorpion ball. And I don't know exactly what they had, but I know the Romans were very cruel. And they had a ball that had hooks on it. And so what it had a chain, and when they threw it, it would wrap around the body. And then when it would unwrap, it would take those claws and it would unwrap and it would just scar the body all the way across. And I said, they whipped him over and over. They beat his face so much that it was swollen. They couldn't even see who he was. And have you ever seen anybody in a fight where their eyes are swollen because they've been hit so much in the face? He wasn't recognizable because of the pain. And then they got him to the cross and they didn't have a lacquered cross. It was a stick. It was rough, and they threw him on it, and here his back is raw meat. They threw him on it, and she was crying by this time. And I said, and they didn't gently put it up in a hole. They picked it up, and they thrust it down. And his hands, we know that they probably went through here, because if the spikes had gone through here, they would have gone out here. So we really think it was right here. So they laid him down, and they didn't have these little spikes they were putting him. They had these big spikes that they put in, and they nailed him on that cross. They didn't care. They were Romans. They could care less that this was the Son of God. They were hammering those nails in his arms. And then they thrusted that thing down. And when they thrusted it down, it had to rip more flesh, plus the raw meat on his back. She was crying. And I said, he did that for you. He did it for me too, but he did it for you. I want you to tell him 3 times, you did it for me, but I don't care. And you can go with your friends. Because that's what you're saying. You did it for me, but I don't care, because the minute you walk out, I know you're going to do things that are not honoring him. He went to the cross for such things as what you're doing right now. So just tell him, you did it for me, and I don't care. By this time, she got mad. She said, why didn't you just tell me no? Why didn't you just tell me no? And I said, because I want you to decide. It's not my choice. He's your God. He's my God. He did it for you. He did it for me. I'm not questioning things that he's asking me not to do. You are. So it's for you. Tell him. You don't care. You did it for me. You don't care. Three times you tell him that. She said, never mind. I'm never asking you again to do anything bad while I'm here. Just never mind. And she walked out, and that was it. She made the choice. Now, she wasn't mad at me, but she really wasn't mad at me. She saw something that changed her heart, and I think that was, she was upset. The Holy Spirit was working on her. Later on, she came back, and she apologized. She said, you told me what I needed to hear. Jesus loves me. Jesus died for me. He cares about me. And I said, what are you going to tell your friends? And she said, I don't know. And I said, well, if I have to be your scapegoat, you can let them know that I said no, if that makes it easier for you. Her friend called, and she said, Jesus went to Calvary's cross for me, and he loves me, and I'm not going to go out and do anything bad. So that was it. So she decided not to go. And like I said, the whole time she was there, she did not do anything like that. So that's enlisting the child's will. I wanted her to make the choice. I didn't want her to go. I could have stopped it. But I wanted her to make a decision that would last with her. And it did. Years later, she got in touch with me. And she told me how much I made a difference in her life. That I loved her, to love her enough to tell her about a God that loved her too. And she's not in the Adventist church, but she is in a church, and she does love Jesus. I just keep praying she'll come back to the Advent church. So education, you explain the whys, the reasons with the child. When to use it. If a child is obedient, you can start educating at 6 years of age. If they're not, you wait, but you can start using it then. Anytime the examples would be cleaning up the room. Oh, this is for children, I'm sorry. Children. So like I said, we're educating. We're going to teach them how to clean a room, how to pick up their toys, why we need to eat good food. These are all things we're going to explain. Only explain if you have obedience. I don't educate unless my children are obedient. Then you start all your education. Educating for youth, it would be explaining the whys, reasoning with the child. Most of the time you would use in the teens, it's when it's strongest, and if they consistently obey, then start teaching. So if you always have obedience, start educating as to why it's important to have good friends, how to take care of the car, why we choose not to choose bad entertainment or music, importance of dress, diet, etc., explaining our standards, importance of obedience, respecting authority. You can start educating in all those things. Educating. Be careful during this stage. Education is not to help a child understand so they obey. You don't need their agreement for them to obey. The child should already be obeying. This is the time to enlighten the mind as to why it's important to obedience. Do not start educating until you have obedience, no matter the age. The last one's developing to unfold or displayed. Do we see our children walking in the truth that we have taught them? Are they learning the lessons that we want them to know? If not, we need to retrain and re-educate. Developing is what you are looking for throughout your child's life. You want your child to eternalize all the things you have been instructing your children in. So you're seeing if the child will be obedient to you. For a child, it looks like, see if my child obeys my instructions, even if the child does not understand. Without murmuring, crying, complaining, arguing or questioning. It needs to be prompt, perfect, willing, and cheerful obedience. For our youth, it's looking to see if my child obeys my instructions, uses her knowledge to help make good decisions. She's not affected by peer pressure. She obeys even when I'm not present. Developing with either directing or educating, I'm wanting my child to do what is right. In directing, the child may not understand the whys, but is obeying. And educating, my child understands the whys and is obeying. So Solomon's steps go like this. Start with training, direct. Add education when child is capable of reasoning. Watch for development. The child is walking in obedience. Like I said, when I go to seminars, people are always bringing their babies to me. And this one was in Virginia. I got done presenting, and this mother came by. She had a 10-month-old baby, and she started to explain the problem, and about that time, that baby lunged back And that mom had to jump forward to catch her back before she lost the baby out of her arms. And now the mother was trying to explain to this crying child why she could not get down. So she's educating a baby. Do you think this 10-month-old cared about why it wasn't a good place to get down at the time? That baby could care less. All she wanted to do was get down. So the mother asked, I don't know what to do. This is just starting. My child's having all these issues, and I'm not sure what I need to do. So I spent the whole week that I was there training this baby. And this was a cute baby. We had a lot of fun. So the first thing we were going to do is control the mom. So I told the mom, you need to always speak very kind, firm, but very kind to the child. And we're going to teach this child how to respond to you. So the first thing we're going to do is teach the child down, please. The baby right now is showing you that it wants down by throwing itself back. So we're going to train the child first to that, let the child know that is not a correct method. So we're going to hold the baby, and when you feel that baby starting to move a little bit, you're going to say, down, please, and put the baby down. Then we're going to put the baby back up, down, please, and you're going to put the baby down. And so pretty soon that baby would bob in her arms. And mom said, okay, down, please, and put the baby. Now, mom was using the words down, please. The baby wasn't talking yet. Now we have sign language with please, please. So now we have sign language, so babies go please, but we didn't have that at the time. And so and we should have, it's been around, but now we have baby sign. But anyway, so down, please, and they put the baby down. Okay, so the baby was getting really good at that. I said, okay, that's phase one. Phase two is that the baby is going to bob, and because we've been responding to that baby thinks every time it goes like this, it's going to get down. The next thing we have to teach is just because the baby goes like this does not mean the baby gets down. So now we've got to train the baby. So I use Cayenne for any time mouthy. Soap, used to, I had soap when I was a kid, but soaps have a lot of chemicals. Cayenne's a food, it's just hot. And so I figured it wouldn't hurt them, and it's just a little bit, doesn't take much. So we're going to use some cayenne. So I tell the mom, get some cayenne. And so we had two kinds. We had some powder cayenne, and we had some in a syringe with water because sometimes you have to squirt it in their mouth because they're not going to open up their mouth when they know that cayenne's coming. So I said, we need to have the cayenne. So the minute she screams, we're going to say nope, and we're going to squirt a little cayenne. So every time she goes, ah, she knows, ooh, that burned, ah, ooh, that burned. She's going to pick that screaming with that no-no. And she's going to learn, I don't like this. I don't like the way this tastes. I don't like the way this feels. And it will stop that. So sure enough, the baby went down. Mom said no, and the baby screamed. And mom said no and put a little cayenne. The next time the baby went down, mom said no, the baby screamed. The next time the baby went down, and she went, and she just looked at mom, like, I'm not going to get that stuff. I know what causes that stuff. I'm not going to get that. And she didn't scream, but she kept bobbing. But she kept her mouth shut. She didn't scream because she knew, I don't want that cayenne. So she stopped. And now I said, now what you're going to do is every time she bobs, she's going to look at you. And she did. From then on, she would bob, and then she'd wait. She'd look at mom, and she'd wait. And if mom went like this, she got down. If mom went like this, she was happy. She just sat still. And mom, it only took a week. I was only with her a week. No more complaints. The baby learned. So children learn whatever you teach them. So this child knew what was expected of her. The next one is manners. All children need to be taught manners. I did this with Daniel. I did it with my children, too, that children like to talk when they want to talk. And so I wanted them to know that they couldn't interrupt me. So the first thing is you need to say, excuse me. So when I'm talking, my children say, excuse me. And then as soon as I could, I would answer them. Well, Danny would say, excuse me. And I didn't answer because the person was talking to me, so I couldn't interrupt. And some adults talk, and you can't always interrupt yourself and say, excuse me, to take care of it. So he sat there and says, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. So that is still being unpolite, but it's a nice way to be unpolite. And I said, no, you can't do that. So what you have to do is I want you to learn to just touch my skirt and just put your hand right here. Okay? I'm going to take my hand and put it on top of your hand, just so you know, I know you're there, that I haven't forgot about you. But I also know that when somebody's talking to me, I cannot always say excuse me to them to turn to you. So you have to wait. And because some adults are long-winded, and they may take a long time, and they're not noticing you there, you have to maybe wait for a long time. So we're going to time the timer, and you're going to have your hand here, and I'm going to put my hand over yours, and we're going to time it for 5 minutes. Then we're going to time it for 15 minutes, and then 20 minutes. I want you to be able to stand there 30 minutes, and every now and then I'm going to squeeze your hand so you know I haven't forgot about you. I care about you. I just haven't able to say excuse me yet. The minute I do, I will turn to you and take care of you. So he got where he was able to stand there for 15 to 20 minutes and wait for me to touch. Now, during that time of teaching him that, though, when I actually got in the situation, because this was just practice, I always practice what we're going to do, so my children know what needs to be done. So we have practice sessions. They need to sit still in church. We go to my couch. This is the pew at church. We're going to practice sitting for 5 minutes. We're going to practice sitting for 10 minutes. We practice whatever I wanted my children to do outside my home. We practice in the home. Makes sense, doesn't it? So we practiced. So anyway, when we got in the real situation and the person was getting longer, he started pulling on my skirt. Pulling. I said, nope, that one's not acceptable either. So I took his hand and I held it out away from my skirt. And after I said, excuse me, I said, I had asked you to only place your hand. You chose to pull on me, meaning you're not willing to be patient. So now you may put your hand on my skirt. I'm going to continue my conversation. And then when I'm done, I'm going to answer you. I did not want him to think because he was pulling, he could get what I asked, because I already told him what I expect you to do. Put your hand here and just hold it. So now I'm going to address them, and when I'm done, then I will come back to you. So I finished my conversation, and he sat very nice. He didn't pull, didn't do anything, and from then on, he only would touch me if I needed him. And that's how I worked with the girls, too. And so that's how I took care of manners. And we're going to get into a lot more of this stuff when we actually get into discipline, which it's going to be in a little bit. Okay, so this is another one, training and stuff that I did with my own. I wanted my girls to start drinking water. And I think what I'm going to do is just tell you, and then I'll get back to this. So I wanted them to drink water because I felt it was good. So I was giving them water, explained why I needed them to drink water, which is what I need to do at the moment. I didn't bring it up here. So I wanted them to drink some water, and then what I was going to do is see if they were going to start drinking. And for a while, they were doing pretty good. But then they got to where they weren't remembering. She's getting my water. They weren't remembering to get water. So I prayed about it, and the Lord told me to go get a plant for each of them. So I went down, thank you, and I got a plant for each of the children. And they were so excited to have their own plant, they even named their plants. So I told them, every time you get a drink, I want you to go give water to your plant. You get a drink, you go give water to your plant. So this is going on back and forth. Now, I was educating them because I wanted them to get their water. And then I thought, okay, I've been telling them, I'm going to wait now and see if it's developed. So I just waited to see what was going to happen. And it had gone a couple days that they were getting some water, but not much. But they weren't taking care of their plant at all. And one day I said, are you girls getting enough water? Plants! Our plants! We forgot to water our plants. Anyway, they went in and they were dead. They came back crying and crying. They said, if we promise to drink water, can we get another plant? And I said, I'm not wanting you to promise me to drink water. I just want you to drink water because it's good. Why do you need water? They said, because it keeps us alive. I said, why does your plant need water? It keeps the plant alive. That's right. That's why you drink water. So then they started drinking water. So I just used whatever I could as spiritual lessons so my children would learn what needed to be learned. We continued the education and directing for whatever need was happening. When they moved into boy-girl relationships, don't wait till your kids are teenagers to talk to them about boy-girl relationships. Not a good time. You talk to them when they're young of what's proper relationships. And like I told my girls, I said, when you're drawn to somebody and you're really only 11 and you have that first crush, there's something in that character you like. Write it down. And then when you see another character that you like, another guy that you're drawn to, write down those characters because that's what you're drawn to. There's some characters in that young man you like. And then just hold your heart and just wait. Write down. And then by the time you're ready for you to get married,